Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, get our view from the middle, get ready for week three of college football. He's, of course, doing his thing for USA Today. Pick up a copy of the paper. Check out the red section online. Please visit usatoday.com on Twitter. The handle, at George Schroeder. George, how are you doing this early part of the 2018 football season?
Man, life is good. How are you?
I'm doing good. A discussion we had throughout the day yesterday, the 17th anniversary of 9/11. We basically had people say where they were. A colleague of ours, Austin Meek, mentioned it was half his life ago when he was a senior in high school. Of course, you know, I was here, but being from there, have kind of a unique view of that. On that day, kind of curious, where were you, who were you working for, and what do you remember about that awful day?
I was in my second year covering Oklahoma football for the Oklahoma City paper, the Oklahoman, and it was a Tuesday, which at that time was the day that they had their weekly press luncheon. So I guess they would have played their first game, and I was looking forward to covering the second game. Don't remember who they were playing. I just remember getting up and turning on the TV, and just it was on in the background on one of the news channels, and then not really paying attention because that's what I used to do. I'd turn it on and then fire up my laptop and you know, start surfing the web and things like that. And then I realized that they were fixated on smoke pouring out of one of the Twin Towers. And started, you know, you start looking at it, and you're like, what in the world's going on? And then you begin to figure out what happened, and, you know, it crumbles, and the other one gets run into and crumbles, and, you know, it's just a terrible day. And I just remember figuring that everything had changed. I wasn't going to be covering any football anytime soon, and none of that mattered. You know, obviously they canceled that press luncheon and the game that week. And I remember when they finally lifted the no-fly order several days later, being startled to see and hear planes in the sky.
Wow. Uh-huh.
But that's where I was. So I was in Norman, Oklahoma at the time, and just a surreal, terrible time, I guess, in almost anybody's life that remembers it.
So wait a minute. You started covering the Sooners the year they won the BCS championship in 2000?
True. 2000. I started with the Oklahoman, the Oklahoma City paper, in December 99 to go on the beat in spring practice. Yeah, it's a weird deal. I covered the 21st game that I covered was the first loss I covered.
Wow. That's, yeah, you've kind of, you have a unique documentation of the Stoops era because.
Yeah, I didn't cover his first year. I think they went 7-5.
Right.
You know, covered his second season when they won the national title and sort of shot back into prominence. And so, yeah, it was that was quite a run. I always tell people, and I used to say this when I would speak to groups in Eugene, that when I was at Oklahoma, you kind of run the gamut. You cover, you know, national championships and NCAA investigations and everything in between. So,
wow, nice.
You know, I did a little of both.
That is certainly the gamut. You know, it's been amazing to hear how vividly folks recall the details. I want to get to now. You lose a legend and the new guy does okay. Speaking of Oklahoma, Baker Mayfield goes first in the draft. Enter future Oakland A's outfielder Kyler Murray. You were there for the UCLA game. He throws for 300 with three TDs. He runs for two more. And I get it's just two games, but how special does this young guy look?
Well, it is just two games. Neither Florida Atlantic nor UCLA is really good. Although I saw some promising signs from Chip Kelly's bunch. I think he's going to get them good, you know, sooner rather than later. I don't mean necessarily this year, but sooner. He's got some players. But, you know, the thing about Kyler Murray is nobody knew how he was going to throw the ball. Everybody understood what kind of a weapon he was with his feet, if you paid any attention to him at all. He's among the fastest guys on a very fast team. You know, they've got a couple of future pros at wide receiver and some defensive backs that are probably future pros, and he can run with them. So that's one thing. So he's really dynamic with the ball in his hands. You didn't know whether he could make all the throws and whether he could hit the precision timing routes that Baker Mayfield hit. Now we know he can do that, and their offense with the weapons around him might be at least as potent as it was a year ago. Now, two caveats, and I don't know which one is more important. The first is that they lost their star tailback, Rodney Anderson. And it's a deep, they have a deep backfield of running backs, but Rodney Anderson was clearly the best, and over the last half of last season had emerged as a serious runner, averaging 7 yards a carry. They lost him to a knee injury for the rest of the year on Saturday against UCLA. So we don't know how that impacts the offense. And then the second piece is this. Well, I think the offense's capability is similar to last year's. What we still don't know about Kyler Murray is the things we learned about Baker Mayfield in college football saw was the clutch
yep.
that he had. He had a clutch gene. And when a play needed to be made on 3rd and 7 in the with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter to go win the game, he went and won the game. And I don't, you know, Kyler Murray may well have that, but we won't know until he gets in that situation. So capability-wise, they seem like they have very similar, they do it differently, but very similar potential. But we won't know about sort of the clutch or the it or whatever it is until they get into that situation. You know, it should come as soon as this weekend. They're on the road to an Iowa State team that may not be very good, but beat them last year in Norman. And, you know, it gets more difficult from here.
Yeah, that's always an interesting trip. You and I spoke in the preseason about Clemson, you know, that front seven, Cleveland Farrell, Kendall Joseph. So they go to A&M, and they kind of got out of Dodge with a two-point win, the failed two-pointer in the final minute. Tigers actually devoured the run but gave up more than 400 throwing. Surprising at all, or, you know, Kyle Field, kind of a tough place to play, especially for a non-conference foe?
Oh, it's a tough place for anybody to play, and it was as revved up as it ever gets with 102,000. And listen, it's 102,000, and it's built straight up and down. And so it's a loud 102,000. It's a picture, you know, picture Austin twice as big and just as steep. You know, it's that kind of thing. But that's probably not a good picture because it really wouldn't look much like that. I'm just trying to think of doubling the crowd size with the same steep pitch and meanness and loudness. But I don't worry too much about Clemson. I mean, you go on the road, you play a team that's a fringe top 25 team at night. It's their biggest game of the year, to date anyway. And, you know, you all but take control of the game a couple times and don't quite do it, but you win the game. Really, you won the game. That's the way I look at it. I don't think Clemson's in the business of needing to score style points against somebody like Texas A&M. If that had been, you know, an escape against Wake Forest or something, that'd have been a problem. Or let's make it a non-conference foe. If they had escaped Texas Tech or something, or Arkansas, which is a terrible SEC team, you know, we could talk about it. But I think this is an okay Texas A&M team. I also don't think that the accolades they got for playing Clemson within two mean that they're about to turn the corner just yet. I mean, it may well happen under Jimbo Fisher, but we saw them play good games and actually beat people under Kevin Sumlin and not turn the corner. So I'm not getting too fired up either way on either team after that game. But I thought promising signs, frankly, for both.
Yeah, so what you're saying is if they had struggled against, say, Samford, that might have been a bit of a reason for concern.
Yeah, funny. Why would you bring up Samford for like that?
Actually,
hey, listen, what a terrible start for Willie Taggart. And look, it would obviously have been worse had they lost to Samford, and they should have lost to Samford. I know the final score was a 10-point game, but they really should have lost the game. It would have been worse if they lost it. But it's bad enough now. And it is about as disastrous a start as you can actually have. And I know we could be sitting here talking about Kevin Sumlin, or we could talk about Chip Kelly's start, which, frankly, you know, you knew they were going to lose one of those two to Oklahoma. But I really think that even though Taggart's 1-1 and those other two guys are 0-2, that his start is worse than either of theirs. I really do.
I agree. And we'll see what happens at Syracuse this week.
Now Kevin Sumlin could be coming up on the outside of him pretty quick. I mean, they're 0-2 and haven't looked good at all, and he's the only person in America so far who's been able to stop Khalil Tate, his own new coach. But, you know, that's not a good distinction to have. Now, look, there's some other situations going on there, including an ankle that got tweaked against Houston. But look, no question, of the new coaching hires that people thought were good hires, that I would tell you the Willie Taggart hire is the one that has more people shaking their heads than anybody else at this point.
No question about it. Talking college football with George Schroeder, a team who came within a whisker of winning it all were ranked third in the preseason. Georgia, now I know they lost those two ridiculous backs. I think they ran for 2,600 yards. Roquan Smith is now with the Bears. They do return the quarterback. They don't play Alabama, but they crushed at South Carolina. I know they visit LSU. And I don't know, it seems like they've been sneaking under the radar, but you got to believe with their schedule and where they're cited in that conference, that they look pretty legit to return to the playoffs.
Well, they're going to have to win the thing. I'll tell you that. They're not going to lose. They're not going to get roll unbeaten and lose to Alabama or, let's say, Auburn, either of those teams in the SEC West champion in the SEC championship game and get in the playoff unless there's chaos in all the other leagues. If you have two leagues with two lost champions like you had last year, then you might get a second SEC team in with one loss, right?
Right.
But Georgia, with the schedule that they play, is not going to get in if it doesn't win the title. I mean, it can get in with a loss, but it'll have to be a champion. And now, you'll have people argue with me about that, but I really think that's the case. If Oklahoma's 12-1 and Ohio State's 12-1 and Clemson's 13-0, so that's three, then the SEC champ is getting in, but not the second SEC team. And so as good as I think Georgia is, and I think they're really good, I also don't think we're really going to know because they're not going to get seriously tested. I thought people were manufacturing a bit of the whole, boy, South Carolina could really give them something talk going into last week, and as it turns out, that was correct. I was correct.
You were.
One of the rare times to be correct, but I'll happily take it after the fact now. But I didn't think they were going to – I think Will Muschamp's done a nice job at South Carolina. I don't think they're in that class yet. And the rest of the SEC East, hello Florida, is not very good yet. And so it's a – you know, frankly, it's sort of a cupcake schedule, to use a term that people in the Northwest are familiar with.
Yes.
But I just – and I'm not talking about the Ducks and them. I'm talking about Mark Jones and the ESPN analysts,
right,
versus Washington,
right.
But although we could talk about Oregon's non-conference schedule. I know Texas A&M has something to do with that, but we could talk about that. But I don't think we're going to know much about Georgia until they play Auburn at home in November, and until they play in the SEC title game, assuming that's where they go. And I'm like everybody else, I'll fast forward them into it. That's when we're going to find out about those guys, but probably not before then.
You know, the irony is their two toughest games, LSU at Death Valley and Auburn, they play this week. Eddie Ogeron took over 2016. He had a good finish, got the job, went 9-3, started number 25 this year, crushed Miami in game one. I know they've got like a new quarterback, new running backs, new receivers. Defense lost a bunch, and now they go to Auburn and they're a 10-point underdog, and with AU already beating Washington, man, the winner here looking real good with two quick quality wins.
Yeah, no question. And look, I'm covering that game in Auburn, so I'm looking forward to it. It's a 12:30 Pacific kick, which, you know, means 2:30 Central Time, which is local time to Auburn. And as a sports writer, those are the kind of kickoffs I love. But it could be a real fun game. I'll tell you this. As you know, I saw the Miami-LSU game in Jerry World on that, you know, the first Sunday of the season.
Right.
I'm not buying LSU at this point yet, especially after the Southeastern Louisiana game last week when they really sputtered on offense, which has been the problem for them forever and the big question mark for me. I don't know if their defense is really as good as it looked in the Miami game. It might be. But even if it's sort of the standard big, fast, arrive angry LSU defense, I don't know that their offense can get out of its own way again. And if that's the case, that's a real problem, especially against an Auburn defensive front that as good as anybody's not named Clemson.
Yeah, it's amazing. In a game like that, they barely had 300 yards, and it's just those black holes, quarterbacks for Texas, offenses for LSU. It's amazing. Powerhouses.
Well, Florida has had the same issues,
yeah,
with quarterbacks, yeah. And LSU really has had issues with quarterbacks. But, yeah, and it's hard to explain how those things happen. Now, with LSU, though, it's been two coaches in a row who thought they could win by – slamming the ball up the middle, playing power football and running play action passes, but they didn't have the quarterbacks to do it, and it's harder to win that way these days anyway. But with Texas and Florida, and you didn't ask this, but the fact that they have not had consistent quarterbacking play since Colt McCoy hurt his shoulder against Alabama in that national title game at the end of the 09 season.
Yeah.
And since Tim Tebow left town in Gainesville, they haven't had a consistent quarterbacking play at two powers. That is an amazing thing. And it's a really, it's the, if you want to pinpoint the reason those powers have faded, it's the biggest reason.
No question about it. And like I said, it's a mystery. The last thing I want to talk about is my man, Herm Edwards. Blowout opener against Texas San Antonio. Then in comes 15th-ranked Michigan State. They beat them. The guys away from the college game almost 30 years. Put together an interesting staff, some NFL guys. I've just always been a big fan of his. I've always felt he's had a spot on moral compass beyond what a great football man he's been. You know, they draw Stanford, Washington, and Oregon out of the North. So let's not jump to too many conclusions. But as a journalist, a pretty interesting start to what could be a really unique story.
So they got the pillowy soft end of the North is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, the opposite. Now, that's pretty rough to draw those teams out of the North. But, look, it's only two games, and the only game that really counts out of that is the win over Michigan State. Now, I don't know how good Michigan State is, but it's a big win. And given how widely that hire was panned by all sorts of people, including me, and part of it wasn't just the Herm Edwards hire, the fact that he'd been out of the game 9 years and out of college for almost 30, as you put it. You know, hadn't been in coaching in 9 years. He'd been in a TV booth. But part of it was the fact that they were going to reinvent how you organize a football program, and they had the 2,600-word press release touting the new leadership model that read a little bit like one of those five-year plans the Soviet Union used to put out. You know, but that's part of the reason that we didn't, you know, that a lot of us sort of chuckled and rolled our eyes and thought this is not going to work. And then you add in the fact that you have a 64-year-old who's been out of the game for so long. But let me just say this. I agree with you. There are a lot of people that want him to succeed because of who he is as a man, and I'm one of them.
Yep.
And I spent about 45 minutes, maybe an hour, with him in his office in May. And my older son, George, who's a teenager now, was a little bitty guy when we lived in Eugene, went with me, or he flew out to meet me for a weekend, and we were going to did some hiking and had some fun in Arizona. He was with me for that interview. So we sat at a table, a conference table in Herm Edwards' office, and about half of the interview was really Herm Edwards' life coaching my son. It was unbelievable.
Awesome.
And we walked out of there, and I guarantee that my son George and I both would have run through a wall for Herm Edwards, because that's the effect he has on you. But I had this lingering doubt, Steve, whether or not the wall would give way. That was sort of my dual thought process at that point. So I didn't know if it was going to work, but I knew that he was going to motivate everybody to do their very best. And they looked like a well-drilled unit the other night, unlike anything I've seen out of an Arizona State team in the last two coaches. And they managed the clock like an NFL team would have at the end.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Yeah, meanwhile, over in, as much as I like Scott Frost, earlier in the day at Nebraska, because they're stubborn and have to run things fast, nursing a lead with about 3 and 4 minutes left, they're not milking the clock down to the last snap. They're running, snapping the ball with 12 and 13 seconds on the play clock, and it came back to bite them. Now, I'm not trying to take a shot at Scott Frost. I'm just saying that's a direct. We looked at two different ways of going about it, and I like Herm's idea.
No, they kicked the field goal with no time left, and Nebraska left Colorado about a minute and a half, and do the math. There's a loss in the window.
You could have easily left Colorado about 30 seconds.
I agree.
You know, and that's what they should have done, and it came back to bite them. But the thing with it, with Herm Edwards, was it was just such a well-drilled team, and I don't know how much of it is going to carry forward, but I think we need to reevaluate. I don't think it has to be a debacle like a lot of people thought it was going to be, and I don't know that I thought it was going to be that, but I feared it might be.
Well, I was dumbfounded when they made that hire. And I said the only thing he's got going for him is I think it's the wrong move, which will probably work out right. And I'd be happy. I'd be happy to be wrong, folks.
Well, and at this point, I hope you are. And if you are, I will have been too, and a whole lot of us will have been. So, you know, we're all in bad company. But I'm rooting for him, and I think they're going to be competitive. And let's look at this, too. I don't want to overdo this, but look at the South, the Pac-12 South right now. Maybe USC is going to find its way, okay, because they're still pretty talented, and I think the freshman quarterback is very talented, and it's just a tough spot to be in. But who do you think is going to win the South right now?
Well, right now I might lean Utah with their experience on offense.
Could it be Arizona State? I mean, even – you know, I mean, it's one of those three teams. It's certainly not UCLA. You know, it's not Arizona. I mean, why not Herm Edwards to win the South? I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Which, and I know we're only 2 weeks in, but yep. Could you imagine you'd be saying that 2 weeks ago?
Not even almost. Not even close. But like I said, it's going to be fun to watch, and I'm absolutely rooting for a guy like that, folks. He is George Schroeder, USAtoday.com, on Twitter at George Schroeder. Hey, enjoy that Auburn LSU game. That should be a dandy. Travel safe as always. We look forward to talking to you next week, George.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, take it easy.